In the 1950s, British colonial aspirations met brutal resistance in Kenya. A guerrilla uprising by the Kikuyu tribe, dubbed Mau Mau, came to symbolize African savagery, as described in this 1956 BBC documentary.
There was an empty place in their minds, and what came to fill it was that mixture of obscenity, cruelty, and conspiracy called Mau Mau, oaths too disgusting to be published, the mutilation of living cattle and human beings, massacres of women and children.
The British detained tens of thousands of Kikuyu in camps and called this rehabilitation, part of Britain's civilizing mission. A decade ago, Caroline Elkin set out to write her dissertation on the success of this mission, but what she discovered turns history on its head. Elkin's new book is called Imperial Reckoning, The Untold Story of the End of Empire in Kenya.
When I initially did my research and looking at some very seductive files in the British Colonial Office, they're all about, as you said, rehabilitation, which was a hearts and minds campaign. They're going to teach these folks in detention camps how to be good British middle-class citizens. Well, I come to find out that there was a purge, a massive purge of files. I feel about 90% of the files had been burned just on the eve of decolonization.
So what was the British policy toward the Kikuyu, the Mau Mau? You mentioned detention camps, and there was something called villagization.
Yes, yes. I should step back and say that the British claim that there were about 70,000 detainees in these camps. In fact, I come to find out through my research that the number is really closer to about 300,000. But the women and children were another matter altogether, and they ended up detaining them, but not in the camps, but in these emergency villages, which were about 800 of them scattered throughout the Kikuyu countryside. And they were absolutely abysmal, surrounded by barbed wire, forced labor from sunup to sundown, terrible torture, and all with the point of getting these people to break their allegiance with Mau Mau. They had to confess that they had taken this oath of allegiance to this movement for land and freedom. And of course, the Kikuyu refused to do this because they are not going to kowtow to the British. And ultimately, of course, they all have to confess. And if they don't confess, then they have to perish in the camps or in the villages.
Did they renounce their oath? What did the British want from them exactly?
There was an idea with the British with rehabilitation that if a Kikuyu confessed his or her oath, that the quote-unquote spell of Mau Mau would be broken. That confession was the key, that you had to admit to have taken this oath. Because in the pledge in the oath, it said, I pledge myself to kill all the Europeans, and if I don't, may this oath kill me. So the idea was to have them confess their oath, and since that confession didn't kill them, then they would realize that, in fact, confession was fine and that they could break the spell of Mau Mau.
And throughout this, you periodically go back to show what was being said about what was happening in Kenya back in London. And there's this incredible PR campaign to stress the positive. And you excerpt a news article from the Sunday Post in 1956. It's about the visit of a British official to one camp. This official is called Mrs. Gash. And the article says, Mrs. Gash said that confession and rehabilitation of women detainees was proving better than a course of beauty treatment. The women arrived at the prison sullen, sour, unpleasant, and downright ugly, but after confession and rehabilitation, they lifted their heads, and many of them became really pretty. Was this propaganda effective?
It was extremely effective. I think a few things have to be borne in mind. And I say this in the book, not since the Black Hole of Calcutta did a single word or phrase, and that is Mau Mau, connote such savagery and bestiality in British colonial parlance. And this was true back at home in the metropole. And so therefore, there was this real sense that they were civilizing these Mau Mau savages.
They were portrayed as very savage and brutal. I mean, were the attacks that they did stage bad, or was it really blown up?
Absolutely. I mean, the Kikuyu method of killing was quite bloody. It was done with pangas or machetes. And these images were then sent all around the world to various newspapers. And they were absolutely horrific. Indeed, they committed some terrible atrocities. But in the dreadful balance sheet of atrocities, the staggering numbers of Mau Mau who were killed far outweigh the number of Europeans who were killed, which were, of course, only 32.
There are only 32 settlers died in the entire, what was it, 7-8 years of the time you're describing?
Yes. It's quite incredible. And if one were to ask, and I was living in London for a large part of this, and I would talk to people who had lived during this period, and they said, oh, Mau Mau, terrible, horrible, savage thing. Don't you know? tens of thousands of settlers were killed by these horrible savages. And that's still the sentiment today. And I think it speaks to the fact of how powerful these public relations departments can be within governments and how incredibly, incredibly effective it was during the 1950s.
Tell me in a bit more detail about what kind of treatment the Kikuyu had in the detention camps.
The treatment was absolutely horrific in many of the camps. Now, granted, there were a few exceptions, but just to give you an example of sort of a day in the life, if you will, detainees were expected to wake up long before sunrise. They were given what was, you know, at best watery porridge for breakfast and marched out into the detention camps outside to the works projects to work all day long. They're constantly being beaten, pulled aside and tortured. Castrations are going on. We have awful, awful, unspeakable kinds of torture. And then they return at the end of the day, and then once again, all through the night, they're woken up with 24 hours, 7 days a week of God Save the Queen being played over the loudspeakers in some of these camps, and they start the whole process all over again. And in some ways, this sort of typical day was banal for many of the survivors who I interviewed. For them, it was only the most horrific and grotesque forms of torture that stood out in their mind. The rest of it was like wallpaper to them in their memories.
Were these kinds of excesses repeated in other British colonies?
That's an excellent question, and in fact, the subject of my next book. I'm very interested in that question because, and in fact, in some ways, it gets to some of the issues that are circulating today in current news about how one deals with what are called low-intensity operations. And the British really, in some ways, wrote the book on this. Because prior to Kenya, there was Malaya. There was a big counterinsurgency in Malaya, and prior to Malaya, there was Palestine. And then after Kenya, we have Cyprus and we have Northern Ireland. And in fact, many of the same exact personnel are moved from Palestine to Malaya to Kenya to Cyprus to Northern Ireland. And it's at Kenya that we also see the departure point from Kenya to Washington. So we see much of the Vietnam policy actually being modeled on what happened in Kenya during the 1950s.
Caroline Elkins is an assistant professor at Harvard University and the author of Imperial Reckoning, The Untold Story of the End of Empire in Kenya. Thank you so much.
Thank you.